Welcome to the Smarter Roofer Podcast.
Join twin brothers Elias and Matt Raber,
along with co-host Owen Schrock, as we share current marketing, sales, business, and life strategies to help you grow your commercial roof coating business. Let's dive in.
Well, Benz, it's the holiday season, the season of giving gifts. Today, we have a gift for you. I'm actually sharing the closing keynote presentation from the last Smarter Roofer conference. I didn't get a chance to hear this, and it didn't really sink in at the event just because we had a lot going on. But while editing the video here a couple weeks ago, I was like, wow, we really, really have to get this message out. And so in today's presentation, Clay Shiver, a former NFL player, shares three key things that business leaders need for success. And he has especially a very, very powerful closing idea and thought. And so I wish you a great holiday season and enjoy this episode.
Man, what a backdrop. If you could ask for a backdrop, right? And did he set the stage or what? Wow. Lee, that's a hard act to follow. I'm glad they put the auction in between so I can kind of have a little leeway room here. All right. Well, this is it. And it looks like I get the honor of landing the plane or being dessert. I don't think of myself as dessert. I like dessert. But there's nothing like having a really good meal and being super full and then having a bad dessert. Or if, you know, you're going to land the plane, you don't want to crash land the plane. So we'll see what we can do here in a short window, because I know everybody's stirring. Man, what a full, when you think about it, it feels like it was like a three-day weekend conference. But when you start thinking, man, it was yesterday and today, man, are you guys full like I am, right? I mean, it's been a great conference. It's been really, really surprising to me. First time at Smarter Roofer. And I can't tell you like how impressed we are as Max 4 coming in and what the Rayburns have done here and what they've continued to build. And then Owen putting things together behind the scenes. And I know he's still working back there in the booth. So thank you, guys. Thanks for having us. It's an honor to be on your stage and certainly an honor to wrap things up. So I did play for the Cowboys. We'll get to some of that. But I can tell you in being here, that roofers are feel like my kind of people. And I grew up the son of a diesel mechanic. And so anything diesel we did. And now what's crazy is my father has passed that business on to my brother. So I grew up in a family business. My mom did the books, right? Any wives out there doing the books, right? No, none. Yes. Okay, Liz. I know Liz has done the book. I've been on the phone with her a couple of times. She keeps everything straight with Ruben, right? Okay. And so sometimes that created a little friction in the home, right, between mom and dad. But it was actually amazing to see them work together. But we worked in a metal building. My dad's first building was a metal building. And I remember, I don't know why they put the temperature gauge in there just as a torture. But in the summer, you see that thing go up, it'd go up over 115 and then just stop. So I don't know what it ended up being, but we had to be in long pants and I was pulling stuff out of the acid and back when they let you use some acid for stuff like that. And you'd get it all cleaned up. My dad didn't trust me to fix it, rightfully so. His mechanics would fix it, but I would clean it all up and get it in the shop. But man, I saw, you know, truckers and farmers come through our shop over the years there in South Georgia. And it was just an amazing kind of situation growing up. I didn't learn probably as much as I would have liked to from that side of the business, but that's not the direction I went anyway. And but it feels, whenever I'm around roofers, it feels kind of the same as a lot of the people I grew up with. So I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be on the team with Max 4. I get to be something called Chief Culture Officer. Now, you say, well, what in the world is that? Well, maybe I'm still figuring out, but before I coached high school football for a period of time, before I did that, I had a background in executive coaching and leadership development. Had started a couple of businesses and then found myself coaching executives and sorting out their problems and and actually felt like I was getting pretty good at it. And then we kind of changed directions. And so now I feel like I'm coming back to more of that. And it's a lot of fun. I get to work with high-level leaders, and there's nobody better, I'm convinced, to work with than Justin and Ray and Men of Integrity. And so it's my job is fantastic. I love what I do. We just put on a leadership event in Tennessee. Raise your hand if you were at our event in Tennessee. I know you guys were. Yep. A few of you guys. So good. And so, man, it was fantastic. And it was something we did for $29. And I said, Justin, if we're going to make it $29, we're obviously putting money into this as a company. Why don't we just make it free? And he said, if we make it free, they're going to think we're going to sell them a timeshare or something, you know? And I was like, well, that's a good point. So, we were in the Tennessee mountains there, and it was a fantastic time. So it was a lot of fun. Now, one of the things that I get to talk about and have talked about is culture. And you hear that as a buzzword and, you know, like, how do we change culture or cultural transformation? And these are all terms that you hear thrown around, and man, you got to have a right culture, and man, culture is king and all these things. But I'm going to give you just one point. And if you're at our UIL retreat, then this will dovetail nicely into some of what we did there, some of what I did there. And I want to talk a little bit about what happens once you get to a place where you've fulfilled all that you can see. Now, this can happen in a bunch of different areas in your life. Sometimes we think of leadership as this linear progression. I don't know about you, but in other areas of my life, I've kind of thought, man, if I can just get to this place here, then things will be okay, or things will be better, right? Maybe if you're having trouble paying the bills, maybe if I could just get here, then I will have arrived. Man, if I could just, you know, get a scholarship to go to college, then I won't have to work in my father's diesel shop the rest of my life. I can go and play ball. And if I could just get there, and then you get there, and then what happens? Well, we'll talk about that today, but that presents new challenges as you're in that place, right? If you've had kids in diapers, which probably most of us have, right? You just want to get them out of, if we could just get these little crumb snatchers out of diapers, man, we would be like, oh, God bless us. We could just get there. But then you get there and you realize, well, there's a whole new set of problems, right? And then you're like, man, if we could just get them to tie their own shoes or whatever your thing is. And then you get there and it's like, man, now they're into everything. If we could keep them out of this and keep them out of, and so there's always something, right? And you're like, man, if we can just get them, then you get them out of the house and it's like, man, what are you going to do for a living? And it's like, there's always new challenges. And the problem with that thinking is you think that leadership is linear and that at some point you will have arrived with all the answers. And that's just not the way it works. Now, Nike, the company Nike sells shoes, they have the symbol of a swoosh. And it's because in, mythology, you have the goddess of victory is Nike. And Nike is winged. Why? Because it doesn't stay in one place. So in life, in sports, certainly, you may have won your last game, but guess what's coming? Another game. You may have won, you may have been the best team in an entire season. When I was at Florida State in 1993, we won the national championship. We were the best team in the country in that season. And I remember driving home the very next day from Miami. We were in the Orange Bowl that year. We were driving home, and I remember thinking, oh, man, we won it. I actually was thinking about it that night before I went to bed. I was thinking, man, it's great to win a national championship. But I was a sophomore realizing, man, tomorrow I'm going to wake up, and guess what I've got staring me in the face? The next season. So guess what I'm going to start doing tomorrow? I got to get ready for the next season. And it can be this ongoing pattern if you want to stay up with victory, because it doesn't stay in the same place. And we come to a conference with game on as the theme, and I can't help but lend myself to this idea of victory. If we're going to play a game, I want to win. I don't know about you, but if I'm going to be involved in something, I want to win. I got anybody else out there with me? It gets a little competitive spirit. You want to win the bid. You want to win the roof. You want to be the guy on the job. Not just, man, can we get one of them? that may be the way you start out, right? Especially when you got no roofs, you just get one roof. But once you get them, then you want them, before you know it, you want them all. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you're going to play, you might as well win. And if you're going to win, you might as well win them all, or at least try to. See where you land. Now, this idea of this moves, that victory moves, and you got to keep up with it, presents sometimes a problem because we have to change. And we think, well, this is just who I am. Man, I am who I am. I'm going to tell you, if that's what you're stuck in, you got a problem, because everything else around you, including the planet, is moving. Seasons are changing. Everything changes. The people around you are changing. Your kids are changing. And if you stay in the same place and you don't grow into those positions of leadership, then you're going to be stuck. You're going to be stuck in that current reality. You're going to be stuck in a place where you start to develop a real comfortable pattern, and you're going to be stuck on you. Henry Ford said it this way: a man who is unwilling to change is already dead. One of the other authors said, most men die at 27. We just don't bury them until they're 72. And there's got to be something that happens in you that says, man, I want to grow more, not just in my business, but as a person, as a man, in my case, as a father, as a husband. If I'm going to do this, not just in business, not just in the public speaking that I do, but in leadership and in every way, right? From the stage to the kitchen, from the boardroom to the living room, if you will. Man, I want to do it with a sense of excellence and a sense of integrity. And I believe that's what I've been fighting for all my life. But there came a point in time when I kind of outran the vision for my life. Ever since I can remember, I just want to, if I could be the best player I could possibly be at Florida State and then go to the NFL. That's what I remember telling people. Hey, what do you want to do? I want to be the best player I can be in college at Florida State University, and then I want to go to the NFL. So guess what I got to do? I got to live that dream. So I played at Florida State, came out of high school, was signed by Florida State. I was, at the time, they signed me as a center. Linemen at the time were routinely about 300 pounds. I was about 240 pounds at the time. When I got to Florida State, they said, you got to get to 300 pounds. We want to get you to 300 pounds as quickly as possible. I never made it, not through my whole career. I was the smallest starting offensive lineman in the NFL when I was at Dallas. Okay, so I had to be stronger, quicker. I had to find a different way to do it than other guys. I had to find a way that fit my frame. But guess what? I became a pretty good player at Florida State. Two-time All-American. I was 2 times Jacobs Trophy winner. Not to pat myself on the back, but I want you to understand this so you understand where I'm going. The Jacobs Trophy is awarded to the best blocker in the entire conference. And so I won that my junior and senior year, was All-American both those times, and then was drafted and went to Dallas. I go to Dallas. I get to Dallas, and everything seems to be going well. Aside from that first snap with Troy Aikman that I mentioned earlier, it didn't go well at all. But everything's, you know, plugging right along. And then I get into training camp. And in the midst of training camp, man, I just could not get myself motivated. I could not get myself moving. It was just like I was practicing, but I was just going through the motions. And I saw like the level of my play drop, the level of my motivation drop. And I was around all these high-level guys, but I could not get myself in a position to play. And finally, my coach goes, hey, I need to have some time with you after our meetings tonight. Training camp was 5 or 6 weeks at the time. A lot of times you're practicing a couple of days a week or a couple of twice a day. And so about 11 o'clock at night, we're done with the meetings. And he says, hey, grab a chair. Let's just sit down. Let's talk for a second. And I said, oh, all right. You know, and I knew I wasn't playing well. And so he says, hey, I just got to ask you one question. So, all right, coach. He said, have you done, like I'm watching film, I'm looking at you as a player, and I have one question: have you done everything you want to do in football? And of course, I don't want to lose my job. So my answer quickly was, no, coach. And he goes, okay, all right. He goes, I just thought I would ask because you've been pretty successful already. And I thought maybe you've done everything you wanted to do because you're not playing as well here as you did even in college. And we can't figure out what happened. I was like, oh, man. Okay, coach, man, I'll ratchet it up. I went back to my room that night and I started thinking, man, maybe I have. Maybe I have done everything I've wanted to do in this area of my life. And maybe I'm done. Now, see, what I know now, and I didn't know then, is the way God has wired us, he's wired us in a way, use a fancy word called teleologically, that we move toward what we see. We move toward what we think about. These things are interlocked, right? And so whatever we set our eyes on, whatever our vision is, we begin to move into that place. And if we don't have a vision, then guess what begins to happen? Is we will get stagnant. Scripture says it this way, right? Without vision, people perish or cast off restraint. And to the degree that you have a vision for any area of your life, now we're talking to roofers at a roofing conference, so we'll lead with that, but we're going to finish a little different. And so to that degree, you will begin to move in that direction toward how you see yourself. Not just now, but how you see yourself projected in the future. And one of the first things I asked, young man, I was at the Conklin Business Seminar, and one of the guys said, hey, can I get a few minutes with you? Right? Which is not necessarily a terrible thing to do. You get free time, right? And this is why what I do with Max 4. And I need to get some things sorted out. Perfect. Let's sit down. And so I grabbed myself a cup of coffee, sit down. He goes, man, I don't know what direction I'm going. I don't know which way is up. I've just kind of found myself in a place that people are trying to, hey, man, you got to do this. You got to give me a plan. And I said, well, before all the planning, like, where do you see yourself? He's like, what are you talking about? Like, where do you see yourself in 40 years? He goes, I don't know. And I said, that's the problem. See, one of the writers that I read says, he says it this way. He says, a man without a vision is a man without a future. And a man without a future will always return to his past. Now, I won't tell you, that's why it should, if you ever see an entertainer or an athlete. I've had some teammates that have had this happen to them, that they're pursuing football. They're great at football. Everything in their life seems to line up. And then all of a sudden football ends and they struggle mightily to find the next chapter. Why? Because they have no other vision than football. And I live this. And I can ask you today, right here in this room, have you done everything you wanted to do? See, here's one thing that you have to understand. I'm going to give you three today. Here's one of them, is your vision has to be beyond your current reality. If your vision is just based around only what you can see, then guess where you're going to stay? Right in that same place. I'm in with my wife and we're talking, about, like, I'm trying to leave to get up here. Okay. I'm going to tell myself for a minute. All right. Because guess what? I need to change, right? I need to change. You need to change. I like what Henry Ford said, man, and I'm not ready to be dead. So I need to change. So, in my head, I'm like, man, you decided to do this with this heavy comforter thing, and I'm trying to pack. I got to get on a plane first thing in the morning, and I don't feel good. You can tell I'm just getting over something in my throat or whatever's going on. And if you're doing this with the comforter, babe, could you have chosen a worse time to do this? And that actually came out of my mouth, okay? Right? I'm far enough into this now, I usually keep those words in there. All right. For you young married couple, just keep those in there until you can kind of govern this thing. All right. But I still will say stupid stuff. So this comes out of my mouth and I could tell, like, it was like she was shut down. But at the time I was like, you know what? It's okay because I'm right. Right. Anybody been right in your marriage and it not go right? Okay. And So I was like, okay, I'll help you get this thing done. We got to get this thing done. All right. Cause I got to pack. You understand? I'm doing important stuff, and this comforter thing ain't important. All right. And so that's what I'm thinking. All right. I didn't say it. All right. But then I'm walking out and all of a sudden I catch myself. Man, how insensitive is that? When am I going to learn? And before I even hit the bedroom door, I go back in and I go, hey, I am so sorry. I was being completely insensitive. You know, my bad. You know, I'm sorry. And she goes, you were being insensitive. And I said, but hey, like when we started in marriage, we're 25 years down the road. When we started in marriage, I wouldn't have even recognized I was being insensitive. And she said, no, you wouldn't have. And I said, I'm doing better. And she goes, you are doing better. And I was like, yeah. Now, guys, I'm going to tell you, that's how you turn a loss into a win real quick, right? All right. And she was like, you are doing better. I was like, yeah, all right. Okay. So you got to change, right? But if you're satisfied where you're at, then you won't change. If I was satisfied at Florida State, guess what? I wouldn't have moved on. I wouldn't. Even at that time, to the extent I at least wanted to make it to the NFL, right? And so are you satisfied where you're at? That's the greatest danger, I think, for most of us. It's not that we're asking too much, it's we ask too little. And we ask too little across the spectrum of our lives. How are you as a husband? How are you as a father? Now, when I ask men that, usually the number one response I get, anybody want to guess? Good. Who said good? Good, that's it. Right? I don't have the, like, Justin already gave away the $500, but sorry. So, but that's it. How are you doing as a husband? Good. How are you doing as a father? Good. Then my follow-up question is, okay, now go ask them. Oh, man, that's a whole different story. Go ask your wife. Now, I'm going to tell you, that might be an uncomfortable question, but it is a great question to ask because you'll get better as a husband. Go ask your kids. Hey, I learned this, thankfully, a long time ago. I'd ask my kids, hey, how's dad doing? I've never been a parent of a seven-year-old. How am I doing? Right? Oh, now they're 11. Hey, how's dad doing? I've never been at 11. You're a pretty good 11-year-old, you know, son. How am I doing as a dad? We ask these questions. Why? Because we don't want to get satisfied. I don't want to get satisfied in these areas. And the danger is if we do, we're going to miss out. And if you don't build these relationships in the single digits, I'm going to tell you, you don't have the relational currency for them to ask you the questions that they should be asking you in the teen years. And that's just a fact of life. And my wife and I have seen it. And thankfully, we're not living it. But that's just the reality. Now, there's got to be something more that's going to pull you out of your current reality in whatever area you're in. If you get satisfied with where you're at in business, man, if we could just get to 1 million, right? And somehow that's a magical number, right? Or 10 million, wherever your threshold is. Man, if we could just get to 10, well, then what happens once you get there, right? So your vision has to carry you beyond your current reality. Here's the other thing, principle number two. Your vision has to get you beyond, has to be outside your comfort zone. People would ask me, I remember, you'd have guys walk up to you like, oh man, yeah, I was a good player when I was in high school and I could have made it, but, you know, I hurt my ankle. And look, I get that, right? Like, injuries happen. And if it's the wrong time of the injury at the worst time, then yeah, that could hold you back. But it's almost as if, like, I've never had an injury or something. I was at practice with Dallas, again, another training camp, and they brought in this back specialist. They said, man, your back is jacked. And I go, I know it's jacked. I would like hobble down to the, like, you know, the trainers. They would heat my back up, get my back warmed up. We're not even in season. We're just in training camp. And then I would go out there and practice, you know, and then after that, I would ice it. And then go back to the room and it would lock up on me. And then, okay, I got to get back down there for this afternoon practice or whatever. So bring this back specialist in. Hey, so, hey, he's going to talk to me about my back. And so with what I did with the Cowboys, those of you who don't know football, that I'd been over and snapped the ball. You probably saw it in the other picture we had. And so he says, hey, listen, you've definitely got, you know, herniated disc. I think your L4, L5 are definitely herniated. And he says, so here's what whatever you do, do not bend over and torque your back. And I was like, man, they flew you in here like, do you know where you came? Do you know what I do? Like, I, you can't help but bend over and torque your back with what I do. So that's not a possibility. You have any other options for me, right? And no. And when you're working through that kind of stuff, it's very uncomfortable, right? And so, man, I've done just about, broken just about everything, torn muscles, torn ligaments, you know, broken bones. At one point, I was playing with a broken bone in my foot. I played with a cracked bone in my hand. I had, they didn't know if it was cracked ribs or I had torn the muscle. There's some muscle around the ribs and I tore it away from the rib, okay, which felt worse to me than cracked ribs, especially if you sneezed. God bless you if you've ever had anything like that. You probably had to fall off a roof to get some of that stuff, right? Or a car accident or something. And so, and you're, I'm playing through all of that. You look back and like, man, are we crazy? I remember one time they were like, hey, we want to shoot your shoulder up with this experimental stuff, you know? And I was like, oh yeah, sure. And I'm just signing the paper and it's like, oh, it may cause problems down the road, but you don't care. You're like, man, I want to play. And like, right? Nobody talks about that. Everybody's like, hey, what is it like running out of the tunnel? What is it like to play with Hall of Famers? What is it like to make that money? What is it like to get a table at any restaurant, even if it's a 2-hour wait? What is it like to you know, have 100,000 people in the stand? What is it like? But nobody's asking, hey, what is it like, right, to have a broken bone in your foot and herniated disc and have blood in your urine and you're still playing? Nobody's asking that. It's uncomfortable. But if your vision doesn't take you beyond your comfort, guess what? You will never leave the place you're at. And that's what we were designed to do. We were designed to change. We were designed to move because that's what's happening in the seasons of our life. Right? Some people will say, I remember I went home and the guy said, man, Clay, it was one of my high school friends. Man, you're so lucky. You made it to the NFL. Any of you business guys, once you get, you know, at a pretty high level, anybody ever say, man, you're so lucky. Right? Well, and I understand that. I don't want to be completely insensitive to some of that mindset. I understand, right? Like God has blessed me and put me in an amazing position and gifted me or whatever. But we all understand that it's not buying a lottery ticket. You didn't just and all of a sudden like, oh, this happened. I built this multi-million-dollar business and I have all these employees and I know exactly what I'm doing with all these guys. No, you grew into this, right? It has nothing to do or very little to do with luck. I don't even believe in luck. I believe God lines us up for the opportunities if we'll take advantage of them. And so I don't think it's got much to do with luck. It's about putting ourselves in a position outside of our comfort zone to embrace the next season before anyone else does. And so we can catch hold of this. And then finally, point number three is your vision has to be bigger than you. I'm going to tell you, I've seen it over and over again with leaders. And I use another little fancy term here, right? Like highly efficacious people. They're notorious for destroying relationships. Efficacy is meaning you get whatever you set your mind to. And being around those people, it's amazing. But one of the things that they're notorious for is tearing up relationships. And in this new age world we sometimes live in, right, this idea of like, man, pursue your passion. Don't let anyone hold you back. And yeah, if there's some dysfunctional situations or, you know, people in addiction or something like that, yeah, then certainly not in that way, right? If there's abuse, certainly you need to move away from those situations. The problem with that is it becomes all about you. And when it becomes all about you, sooner or later, this thing is like a black hole or something. It just kind of caves in on itself. And I've seen it over and over and over again. And as we're here this afternoon, before we leave this place, you've got an opportunity, I believe, to make a decision. Not just to do something different, but to be something different. And I believe the people around you, the world around you, is waiting for that to happen. I left the NFL and people say, oh, you left the NFL, you were injured or whatever. And I was injured a lot. You don't play in the NFL or you don't play that many years without being injured at some point, right? You don't, you know, roof, you don't be, you're not in business. You're not, you can't do anything for any length of time and not have setbacks. But I left to impact people's lives. I got an email yesterday, right? 2 days ago, right before I left. I happened to be on the phone with, on a Zoom with Justin and Ray, and this email pops up. And I was like, oh man, I hadn't heard from this guy in a couple of days or whatever. And then I clicked it and I said, hey, guys, listen to this. And he said, hey, I just want to let you know. And I just so appreciate a few weeks back. I just had my first child. A few weeks back, I was uncertain about being a father. I didn't know what a fathering would be. I didn't know what it would look like. And you and Justin and Ray all prayed for me, all counseled me, all encouraged me on a roof. And he said, I just had my first child. And he said, man, I am so thankful for leadership and influence in my life that's taken me to the next level as a father. That's the opportunity we have. Coming over here, I'm walking through the jetway. As I'm walking through the jetway, I crossed this guy, and he was a baggage guy, and I just got my head down. And I turned around, and I said, you're a preacher. And he stopped, and he looked at me. He said, what'd you say? And I said, you're a preacher. And he said, and I said, do you preach? He goes, no, I don't preach. And I said, you need to start. Because in that moment, God spoke to my spirit, and I called him out, and he said, really? And I said, yeah, start in the shower, start in the mirror, start wherever you get a chance. And all of a sudden, his face changed. He said, man, people have been telling me that my whole life. And I said, yeah, what are you waiting on? Before we went up to our UIL retreat, I got delayed on a flight. And as soon as I got delayed, I thought, man, maybe I'm supposed to talk to somebody in the airport or something. This is crazy. And I'm on standby for the next flight. And so then I'm a third, and then it goes to the next flight. So I think, okay, surely I'm going to get on this flight. And because I was third on the last one. She said, will they transfer over? She said, yeah, they'll transfer right over. And I said, oh, okay, cool. So, they're just going to move over. I'll be third. I got a real good chance of getting on this flight. All of a sudden I show up at the next little gate, and it's like, now I'm 11th. And I'm like, what is going on, man? I'm going to miss this. My sons are going with me. I'm supposed to meet them up there. This is our retreat. Justin and I are putting this thing on. It's like, man, this is going to be embarrassing if I'm late to this thing. And so I see a lady, and I go over to her, and I said, hey, listen, here's what just happened. Like, I was third, and then now I'm 11th, and, you know, I'm losing. I want to win. And I said, can you, you know, do anything? And she said, I don't know. I don't know what's happening with that or whatever. She said, why don't you take a seat out? You know, maybe I can do something or whatever. I said, oh, okay. And so I'm kind of dejected. And so I go sit down kind of like, oh, okay, this is going to get interesting, you know? And as soon as I sit down, I look over at this woman, and I felt like I had an impression of my heart for this lady. And so, man, I was like, it was uncomfortable. And so I kind of got up and I like threw my water away and kind of came back. And I was like, she was on her phone and she had her daughter with her. And I was like, am I just going to bust up in her life or whatever? But I said, yep, this is what I signed on for. Like our painter, like digging wells, like the friend we have in Kenya, right? Man, I want to give God my full yes. And so I walked over to her and I said, hey, as I was sitting there, I believe God spoke something to me for you. And she said, who? I said, God. And so then she goes, oh, really? And she goes, okay. And I said, well, here's what I thought he was saying. And I said something to her. I said something to her daughter. And she sat back and she goes, man, that's crazy. She said, that is exactly right. And she said, hey, are you from here? And I said, yeah, I'm down here in South Florida. What do you do? I said, I'm a chief culture officer from Max 4. And as soon as I said that, at least a Clay Shriver, please come to the podium. I walk up to the podium and the lady is like, you know what? I'm just going to get you on this flight. I'm going to redo your ticket right now. I just felt like it's something I needed to do. I was like, wait, I just said yes back there. See, I would wonder, maybe if you're not in a different place with your business or with your life or with your relationships, because maybe sometimes God's waiting on our full yes. And you can feel the emptiness in your life that you wake up in the morning and yeah, you're busy. You may be making money, but man, have you done everything that you were created to do in whatever area of your life? Man, guys, we were created for so much more. I believe marketplace leaders in the last generation have settled for money, and God has cities in the balance. And there's some of you in here in this room that are literally Jonas, that God is calling to a city to change an entire city, and you've been running. You may have been successful. It doesn't mean you're failing morally. You just know in your heart you've been running for this call of God on your life to change cities. And I believe there's some of you in this room that from here on out, you're going to begin to embrace that because God is calling you back. Not that you need to make a decision so you don't go to hell. You need to say, give your full yes. So God can begin to partner with you at a whole new level. And as we land this thing for Smarter Roofer and for my time with you, I can tell you that God is doing something in the marketplace. And if you don't see it, you need to open your eyes. Proverbs said it this way, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands, and poverty will come on you like a bandit. Now, guess what happens if a roofer refuses to get out of bed in the morning? Sooner or later, he's going to go broke and he's going to go hungry. Guess what happens spiritually? We need to wake up as the men and women of God because there's work to do and we've got Jesus Christ to partner with to see his work played out in the earth. And it's up to us. And I believe for the first time in my life, I'm going to tell you, I don't tell this to people, but in the marketplace of America, it is game on.
Hey there, commercial roofing pros. Save the date, March 13th and 14th, 2025. The Smarter Roofer Conference is coming your way. Get ready for two action-packed days of trainings and insights on the key ingredients of a successful business. Learn cutting-edge strategies, boost your sales tactics, and elevate your marketing game. But that's not all. Connect with fellow roofing business owners, meet top industry vendors, and have a ton of fun along the way. This is a must-attend event to take your commercial roof coating business to new heights. Save the date, March 13th and 14th, 2025. Let's build success together at the Smarter Roofer Conference.